Well, good morning, everyone. Good to see everyone here. That is here. Many are gone, as Jerry mentioned, but we have a lot of visitors with us. And as he said, we're glad that you're here this morning. On Friday, we were driving around, and we stopped at a stoplight, and Christy just said, I'm excited. Kind of like that. You know, and if you know Christy, you know that she can get pretty visibly excited at times. There's times when she can get kind of worked up and all that. And it was kind of just like subtle. I'm excited. I said, well, that's good. Mind telling me what you're excited about? And she was thinking, we have an upcoming vacation. And she was thinking about that. And I said, yeah, I'm excited about that too. The subtlety of that, although, kind of floored me a bit. But it's true that we get all excited about our vacations. We get excited about a lot of things, and those things are expressed in different ways. If you are here on Wednesday night, you heard some kids sing that song. We had a whole row of them just in the back of us, and you heard them sing that with a great deal of excitement, a great deal of enthusiasm, and it was precious. I mean, it was just magic. That's why I asked Brady to lead that song this morning a couple of times, because it kind of got me thinking about some stuff. We are to be called higher. That's the name of that song. He's calling us to go higher. And I think there's maybe a few ways we can interpret that, and we'll kind of explore some of those ways. But one thing for sure is God wants us to be enthusiastic. So that's what I'm going to talk about this morning. I'm going to talk about enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is a word that itself is not used in an English translation that I'm aware of, at least not the more accurate ones. However, the word means, in the Greek, God within. It means God in you. That God fills you up, as one person has said. Paul talks about this concept under different words. And he says in Romans 12:11, do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. Let's go through some of those for just a minute. And we're talking here about being breathed, God inspiring us in a sense, not in the sense that we can write the revelation of God or anything like that. But he is infusing us with himself, and that should cause us to be what we would say enthusiastic or zealous, for example. Do not be slothful in zeal. What does that mean? If you saw Ice Age, you know what a sloth is, right? You've seen a sloth. And one thing about the sloth is he's always just kind of lounging around. He's kind of sitting there. He's always left behind. He's always lagging behind. I mean, the entourage is moving on. He kind of wakes up and gets moving, and he's always lagging behind. There's no sense of urgency about him. And when we talk about being enthusiastic, one thing that's involved in that is having a sense of urgency, being earnest or eager. And the sloth is not that. So Paul uses these contradictory terms. Do not be slothful. Don't be a sloth when it comes to being zealous. Zeal is that enthusiasm we're talking about. That kind of getting up and getting it done. Be fervent in spirit, he says. Fervency comes from the idea of a couple of things. One is to be boiling. What is water at 210 degrees? It's like hot water, right? If I'm remembering my physics right, at 211 degrees, you can do something with it. You can actually change the nature of an egg. You can make pasta and stuff like that. So the idea of being fervent means to be boiling over with that. Another thought that I've used in the past is that to be fervent is like the strings of an instrument, a stringed instrument being taut. I used to play guitar a long time ago. Could not even play a note on it now, probably. But I used to do that. And one thing for sure, the strings had to be taut. They had to be tuned. And you would tune them and make sure they were. If one was broken or loose, obviously everything changed. It wasn't any good to you. Same with tennis. If the string in the tennis racket is not, if those aren't firm, if they're not taut, then you're not going to make a tennis shot very well. You're not going to be very good at that. So it's that idea of being kind of stretched out, and being, again, earnest, zealous, eager, all of that. He then says, serve the Lord. That has nothing to do with tennis. I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. He's talking about actually recognizing enthusiastically that God is our master and we are the slave. We are His servant. So don't be slothful in zeal. Push forward to that. This is one verse, by the way, in a whole series of things he says in chapter 12. One verse. Be fervent, he says, and serve the Lord. You can read into that. Serve with a great deal of energy. Do it with enthusiasm. God is in you. In Colossians 3:23, Paul says, whatever you do, work heartily, as to the Lord, not for men. That's an interesting verse because what Paul is saying there is not to just those of us who are sitting in a pew right now and have pretty good middle class jobs and families and all that. He said this to slaves. He said this to people who were under, who were actual slaves. People who had a master, who they had no control over their life. And he says, whatever you do, work heartily as to the Lord, not to men. Work with enthusiasm. Can you imagine how hard that would be? If you're an indentured servant, if you're somebody who just had to work, you had no choice in that, and maybe those are 12-hour, 13, 14-hour days, and you sleep where they tell you to sleep. You don't sleep in an air-conditioned bed. That's your status in life, and he's telling you to serve with enthusiasm. Serve with zeal. And he says that because verse 24 says, knowing that from the Lord you receive the inheritance as your reward, you are serving the Lord Christ. That tells me this. That tells me that every single time I'm doing anything, I am to do it heartily. Whatever you do, he says, do it heartily as to the Lord, not to me, because I'm always serving God in everything I do. That puts a little different, kind of shapes our life a little bit differently if we stop and think about that for just a minute. The writer of Ecclesiastes says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. All of this is adding up to one thing. There's some pictures from our VBS this week, and these kids are doing, whatever they're doing with all their might. They're doing that with some energy. They enjoyed that. That was what they were doing. And God is calling us out of this kind of sleepy-eyed service that we give Him sometimes. When we decide that what serving God is all about is like coming here and doing what we're doing right now and kind of sitting in a comfortable pew, and that's it. If that's what it is, then He's calling us out of that, away from that idea. As I like to say, we not to come here and sit, soak, and sour. That's not what God arranged His kingdom to be about. People in the first century didn't get to do that. They didn't have buildings like this to do that. So, we're going to look at the song that the kids sang a lot this week. And I went into the song room during the week and heard it. And I've heard it before. I think we've sung it a few times. But it just kind of, if you want to get kind of enthused, then go listen to kids do stuff. Go listen to them sing. Listen to them. We've talked about this before. Watch them. Go out afterwards and watch how they play. They do everything with enthusiasm. And that's something we can learn from them, or we should learn from them. So we're going to go through this song called Me Higher. Note that in the first stanzas of this song, it seems to me that the writer is kind of appraising himself. He's kind of deciding how he wants to shape his effort in his service to God. He's kind of thinking, I'm just going to wait and maybe feel His presence, and that's kind of where he starts. He says, I could just sit and wait for your kind of presence to move me, for your feeling, for your goodness. I could just hope, and I don't think he's using that in a biblical sense. I think he's using that more in a wish. I could wish that maybe your presence will come to me somehow. That's one approach a lot of people take. They kind of sit there. They're not really moved to do very much until they feel it. until somehow there's, you know, they get that feeling and then they get charged up to do something. And I don't know, I haven't, in all the years I've been preaching, and before that when I was in management, I could never figure out how to light a fire under people. It seemed like they had to do that themselves. And so if you kind of say, I could just do this, I could just sit and kind of wait. And the use of that word hope, as I said, is kind of interesting. I hope to feel your presence. I hope to feel it. Let's just sit here for a minute and see if God does it. Hope all you want. Wish for it. Let's just sit here. Wait for God to move you. Is it happening? Anybody feel moved right now? We're waiting. That's not how it's going to happen. So I think he goes on to something else. He says, I could just stay. I could stay right where I am. I could stay put. I could match my status with my quo. I could just say, I'm a guy, all kind of ducks in a row. I got them all good. I'm just going to stay where I am. And hope, again, there it is again, hope to feel your presence. Hope to feel you. We could do that. And we're kind of in the same place, aren't we? He goes on. There's a third line here. I could hold on. Hold on to who I am and never let you change me from the inside. He seems to be getting a little bit closer here, but the same dynamic is in place. He says, I could hold myself in. I could keep doing what I'm doing. Not allow God to change me from the inside. He says, I'm gonna wait again. But I don't want God to change me. What am I waiting for? If we don't want God to change us, what are we doing here? What's the point? If change isn't part of what we are as Christians, if that isn't a huge part, then why are we even here? What are we sitting here for this morning? It is all about change. I think it was Jim Rohn, who's no preacher or anything. I think he's a financial guy or something. He says, life does not get better by chance. It gets better by change. And that's true for our spiritual lives too. We recognize that God, that Jesus and all his teaching is trying to change us. He's not trying to just get us to feel something. He's not trying to get us just to feel differently. Where do feelings come from? I think he gets into that in this song. He says, I could be safe. I could be safe here in your arms. This is all picturesque language. And the way it speaks to me is what he's writing is, I could do all these things. This is the approach I could take. I could just sit here and allow God to act on me. And for me, then something's going to happen if I do that. What's interesting about this is he gets into this part where he says, I could be safe here in your arms. This is a man who thinks, or a woman who thinks he or she is enveloped in the arms of God, that it's kind of comfortable there. The religion that he has chosen is one that is comfortable, safe. And how do we view that? Do we view Christianity that way? Do we think about our commitment to Christ as being that which is safe in the arms of Jesus? You know when they sing safe in the arms of Jesus? I don't think we've sung it here. I think the last time we sang it here was at a funeral. That's how that song is usually sung. Safe in the arms of Jesus we sing when somebody has gone on. It shouldn't apply to living people in an audience here, should it? We are... as we'll see, we're to be enthusiastic, but this isn't a religious happy hour without the drinks and snacks. We're here to be moved, not by just by feelings, but by something else. Something else. So look at again what he says. He says, I could just sit. I could just sit and wait for all your goodness. Hope to feel your presence. I could just stay. I could stay right where I am and hope to feel you. Hope to feel something again. Again. Hope to feel something again. It's like he's had those fleeting moments What is true about feelings? You've had those high points in your life. First time I laid my eyes on my bride. The first time I saw my newborn children, my grandchildren. Those high points in life and the feeling you have at that time, you can remember, but you can't recapture. And they fly away about as fast as they come in, don't they? Nobody's up there feeling it all the time. At least I don't see that in people, and I don't feel that myself. So what are we waiting for? I could be safe. I could be safe in your arms and never leave home. Never let these walls down. Don't let anybody see who you really are. You know, I was listening for it this morning because I did it myself. I said, "How are you?" to several people. I heard that multiple times this morning. But nobody stopped me and said, "Well, how long you got? I'll tell you how I am." Nobody said that because, you know, we don't do that. And that's fine with me. I'm not going to do that with you either. But we can kind of make that who we are. Never letting anybody inside. I mean, I got my walls. I built my little moat around my house. Not only my house, but myself. So that we never really get in to find out who we really are. There are marriages like that. It's pretty sad. Fortunately, in this song, there's a transition. That's the reason we sing it. And that transition comes into this statement that he's calling us higher. The verses we looked at, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, Deuteronomy 6:5 says. Notice he says, love God with all your heart. In the Old Testament, heart typically means mind. That's why we don't see the same exact quotation in the New Testament, because there he says mind, and then later he says heart. And then the Old Testament version of that is might. Loving God with all your might. Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. So the song continues. There is a higher, better, deeper call that God puts out to us that he wants us to hear. In the book of Acts, it's very interesting because we see this. And that was the theme of the VBS this week, was the book of Acts and what the apostles did and how they lived and grew the kingdom to the extent that it was. Now, book of Acts takes place after Jesus had died on the cross, of course, was raised. And it was that resurrection that kind of inspired these apostles to go out and put their life on the line every single day. And that's what they did. And we're sitting here because of what those apostles did during that time. 2,000 years later, this movement from this man who gave up himself, completely denied himself and died on the cross, this movement is still alive and well, here in Folsom anyway. He calls us higher. Let's just take a look at one of the apostles. Turn over to John. John chapter 13. I'm going to quickly go through a couple of things that happened in Peter's life that illustrate, I think, this calling to a higher place. Peter always had good intentions. And as I say, the road to you know where is paved with you know what, right? Good intentions, how far do those get you? He always had good intentions. In John 13:37, he says, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. He just had his feet washed and sat there at dinner with the Lord. And he says, I want to follow. Jesus has said, you can't follow me now. He says, I want to follow you now. I'll lay down my life for you. Well, he's pretty bold. We know that was kind of his attitude, that he was going to protect Jesus. He even got in trouble for that at another occasion. John 18. Here's Peter. What has he done? What did he do three times? This is the third time. Verse 17. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, you also are not one of the men's disciples, are you? He said, I'm not. He said, I'm not with a curse, according to other versions of that. Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter was also with him, standing and warming himself. Jesus is about to be crucified. This man, this apostle, chosen by Jesus himself, said, I'll die with you, no problem. I'll lay down my life for you. Now he's over there warming his hands by the fire of the enemy, for the very people that are putting Jesus to death. Peter warmed himself while Jesus was getting crucified, beaten, and all those things that happened to him. Later, he came around. He repented of that, as we know, in John 21:18. This is Jesus' prediction, his prophecy for Peter. 21:18 says, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. Let's just think, let's just stop there a minute. This is, he says, when you were in another, really another life, when you were in another place in your life, you dressed yourself, you got ready, you went out to work, he was a fisherman, he went out to fish, he did his thing, he did his daily rounds, came back home, I assume he ate dinner and went to bed, got up the next day, and that was his life. Maybe he did something fun on the weekend, I don't know. But that was his life. He says, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. Remember when we started this? I want to follow you. I'll lay down my life for you. He said, you're not ready for this, Peter. Then he denied him. He proved he wasn't ready. His enthusiasm for the Lord had drained out to almost nothing. Now it's back. But Jesus predicts that, well, you'll live enthusiastically for me, all right. You'll have zeal for me, all right. Secular historians tell us that when Peter was crucified, he refused to be crucified like Jesus was. He wasn't worthy to be put on a cross because he was crucified like Christ was, only he requested the cross be turned upside down. So he suffered crucifixion upside down. That was what he gave for the Lord. He was enthusiastic about that. So when the song goes on, I'm going to read 1 Peter. To turn over to 1 Peter chapter 4 before we go on. 1 Peter chapter 4, when Peter himself writes about this, about suffering for Christ, he says, starting verse 12, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice in so far as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or as a meddler. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. For it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if the righteous is scarcely saved, what will become of the ungodly and of the sinner? Therefore, let those who suffer according to God's will entrust their souls to a faithful Creator while doing good. Judgment is going to begin in the house of God. That judgment is a judgment of suffering. He's not saying that we're scarcely saved as if we're not, you know, we're just going to get in there by the skin of our teeth. This isn't an anti-confidence statement. He's saying we're scarcely saved from destruction, comes from suffering for Christ. Back in Acts chapter 4, remember, it was Peter and John who said, when they were told to quit speaking in the name of Christ, they were commanded to do that, otherwise they'd be punished. Peter and John said, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you rather than to God, you must judge, for we cannot but speak of what we have seen and heard. And then in chapter 5, they counted it, they rejoiced because they were worthy to suffer in his name. They were called hires. Somehow, they got there. Somehow these apostles, to the man, other than Judas, of course, were willing to die for Christ. They were called to a higher place. All of them, at one time, didn't get it. They didn't see this. They were dense. They were not understanding the plan of God. So much so that one time Jesus tells Peter, get behind him, Satan, calls him Satan. And yet eventually they came to a place where they were lifted up and called. We're living on the other side of all that darkness, all that unrevealed stuff that was going on in the beginning. When those apostles were living with Jesus, they didn't know the whole plan yet, obviously, but we're living on the other side of that. And so we are being called higher. The song goes on, it says, you have called me higher, you have called me deeper. Now go where you will lead me, Lord. You've called me higher, you've called me deeper. That's where we're supposed to be. What motivated the apostles? What would you say it was? The knowledge that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead. That's the only discernible thing you can see. There was an infusion that, you know, the Holy Spirit came upon them on the day of Pentecost, but they were transformed before that. It was because they knew that Jesus Christ had fulfilled the promise to be raised from the dead, and he was. And so their commitment was, I will be yours for all my life. Paul himself came in later, and he said, in chapter 6, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, he said, you're not your own. You've been bought with a price. And no one exhibited that, exemplified that more than Paul. He was bought with a price. So he was enthusiastic about his service to God. What does that mean to us? What are we talking about here? What do we do with all this? Well, that's nice. The apostles were pretty enthusiastic. I'm going to go out and kind of run around. And it's not about like getting, you know, it's not about, I'm going to go on the street corner and start yelling about Jesus. You know, I'm enthusiastic. And now, how long would that last and where does that get you? That's not the way it's shown. He wants us to come to this next level. And that means maybe you haven't been too enthusiastic about teaching before. I hope this quarter changes that. Maybe you'll get more enthusiastic about teaching our young people and others as well. Maybe you haven't been as responsive to needs. Pure and undefiled religious visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. That's pure and undefiled religion. That means that counts for everybody. The transformed person, the person who's enthusiastic about their service to Christ, is going to take that seriously. They're going to look at that and do all they can to help others. If your time in the building is kind of just here, you're just kind of sitting here, and then you leave here, and you kind of sit here again, leave here again, maybe you're going to participate more, listen more, sing with a little bit more enthusiasm. Because some of you don't sing. You can't be accused of having enthusiasm if you don't sing with it. God's within, not if you're sitting there like a lump on a log and not singing. It's part of the plan. He gave us that. I think that's the one thing he gave us that we can definitely say appeals to both intellect and our feelings. That's part of our total package that he's given us. God has given us everything that appeals to our intellect, our feelings, our emotions, and our will. It's our will ultimately that drives us on. Maybe there's a place of trial for you. Maybe you're suffering, and that suffering's for Christ. Seems to me, Paul said, do that enthusiastically. Do that with enthusiasm. Our service to God can become just an intellectual exercise, and it's not just that. That's important, but it's not that. We can get pretty intellectual around here, as some of you know. We got a lot of intellectuals here, a lot of smart people in this, and I love it. It's great. We can dig deeper, and we love digging deeper, studying the scriptures, kind of getting our nose in this book, and we need to do that more. I love all that. That's great, but it's not just that. It's not just that. That helmet up there, in Ephesians chapter 6, you're aware that Paul talks about the putting on the armor of God. Right? Well, what happens sometimes is we get the armor of God and we begin to analyze that armor. We get all the Greek words and stuff, and we found this and this, and we go back, we get all the background and everything, and we come to this conclusion that we know quite a bit about the armor of God. We get the helmet of salvation. Oh, the helmet of salvation. Why a helmet? And then we have our opinions that we talk about in class about our opinions of why it's a helmet of salvation. That's okay, we get that. What does Paul say? He says, put it on. Don't dissect every little thing in the helmet of God. Put it on. Get busy. Be enthusiastic about your service to God. It's great to dig deep, but not in place of doing things that matter in the lives of others. Put it on. That's the higher calling. I know one thing for sure, and I do not believe God accepts anyone who just thinks they can go through their life in Christ on cruise control. That's not what the kids learned this week. They learned that there were apostles who lived their life all week, gave their life, sacrificed everything to follow Christ. Sometimes we get all excited about the signers of the Declaration of Independence because most of them sacrificed their life, and yes, that was really something. But they don't match to what the apostles did. Nor was the depth of what they did as important. They gave up everything to get us where we are today. So he's calling us higher. Whatever your man finds to do, love God with all your heart, with all your might, with all your soul. Whatever you do, do it heartily, as for the Lord, not for men. That's where he wants us. And as far as I'm concerned, I'd rather burn out than rust out. Because a lot of people that are just, if we just stay put and don't learn what we're supposed to be learning from what the apostles did and from the book of Acts, which kind of is on fire. The whole thing is on fire. I wish that our Bibles, we open up to Acts and just get, just starts burning. The pages start burning, like the burning bush that doesn't actually consume, but just burning. Because that's the message that's there. And it's just enthusiasm lived out. God within lived out in these people. That's pretty cool. And we can rust out by just kind of saying, well, I'm a Christian, and that's a great thing. My life is better, or not, but that's where I am. And I'm excited about that. I think it's more than that. So, take the message from these little kids and learn from them. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, especially in your service to God. Especially in your service to God. So we're going to sing this song again. He's calling us higher. What I'd ask you to do is to examine yourself. Examine yourself. Just make sure you're in the faith, and do that as we sing this song. Ask yourself: is that call to this higher place? Is that just a call? We're called by the word. We're called by the gospel. Is that just a call? I mean, there's a lot of things we hear that we don't pay any attention to. There's a lot of things people want us to do that we don't do. God is calling us. He's saying, I want you to go to another place. I want you to reach another level that will set you apart from everybody else in this world. Why have groups that are formed out of evil motives made, why have they made more strides and been more successful in convincing people? The LGBTQ community is about 3%. They have changed the world in the last 10 or 20 years. Where are we? Where are the Christians when we have what we have? Why are we not making those kinds of changes? Why do we just think we can go through life and appear here and go out and do our daily work It doesn't work that way. He's calling us higher. That's what that song... This song is a beautiful song. It's a very uplifting song. And I'm probably down trotting it or downlifting it. But the point is, it doesn't do us any good to sing the songs if we're not going to actually make an effort to do what the song says. That's my point. If you haven't become a Christian yet, examine yourselves. God is calling you to a higher place. If you haven't been baptized yet, let me say a couple things, and then we're going to sing this song. Number one, you don't have to walk down front. I didn't know this as a kid. I was like, I thought I had to walk down front, and I feared people. I didn't know, especially Christians. I really feared them. But yeah, I didn't have to walk down front. You can do it whenever you feel you've been called to that place where you need to do it. In the presence of nobody else except when the person who's baptizing you. That's what you want. That's what you want to do. And if you're a young man, walking down or getting baptized in the dead of night, we're not going to ask you to preach next week. Okay? That's not what we're going to ask you to do. These are things that I realize that are going through the minds of people sometimes. And so just keep that in mind. But do it. That's the point. You're being called. Do it as we stand and sing.